Is This a Ghost is sponsored this week by our friends at Smart Labels.
No way!
Smart Labels crew is back.
The king returns.
It is the fall organizational season, famously.
I just flipped the calendar over and I noticed that written right there, big and bold. Fall organization
organizational season now. Mm-hmm. That's right. Here's what I'll say. So obviously fall is it's the kickoff of the big decoration season.
Mm, correct.
Halloween is lots of decorations.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Columbus Day is lots of decorations.
Columbus Day. Well, yep. Yep. Lots of hatchets, lots of blankets mm-hmm, yep. With smallpox on them. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you do not want to misplace those. No. You want to make sure you've got a tab on where those guys are. And you've got your Thanksgiving, of mm-hmm. course, big Thanksgiving spread.
Absolutely.
And then, the Christmas season is just chock-a-block with inflatables. And so this, if you are not very organized, this is the perfect season for you to get organized. And Smart Labels can help you do it. If you haven't heard about Smart Labels before, if you're new to the show, they are wonderful. They are these stickers with QR codes that are color-coded and QR-coded. Mm-hmm. And you stick them on your boxes, you stick them on your crates, you stick them on your little mm-hmm. Michael's brand plastic indestructible snap top things. Mm-hmm. You scan the label with the app, you just type in there, here's what's inside here. This one is smallpox blankets. Do not open until Columbus Day. And then you put it in your house somewhere, you type in the app where mm-hmm. you put that, where in your house you put it, mm-hmm. You take a picture if you want, and then when you need to find it later, mm-hmm. you just go to the app and you type in smallpox blanket.
Exactly.
And it pops right up, shows you exactly mm-hmm. where to go.
Yep. And importantly, you take that little chunk of your memory that you were using to remember where all that shit was, poof.
Gone.
You can drink that little brain cell away. It's gone. It's no longer necessary.
That's an extra beer or two, friends. That is one extra brain cell where you can remember, Joe Montaigne quotes, which is where an inordinate number mm-hmm. of my brain cells have gone to, and I'm not sure why. We moved, obviously, pretty recently to mm-hmm. Virginia, right. across the country.
Yeah, your annual move, I remember. Yeah.
Annual move, yeah. And we, now that, when we started looking for our Halloween decorations, which was, by my clock, September 1st, because my children are insane. I was like, where did we put those? Because it was just, the moving was a haze. Mm-hmm. So I pulled up my Smart Labels app. I said, Halloween. I typed it in there. Boop, boop, boop. Halloween. Mm-hmm. And once I spelled it right, it showed me exactly where those boxes were. Now, in my case, those boxes were in the very scary crawl space on the side of my kid's bedroom. Right. So I did not go in there.
So we purchased, are
not celebrating Halloween. But we could. Mm-hmm. We could.
Theoretically.
If we wanted to. Mm-hmm. Theoretically. You know exactly where those things are. So we could. And you could theoretically celebrate things too. So go. Smart Labels is, it's so great. They will help you stay organized. We truly love them. We've both used them. And they are truly, they will free up so much of your brain space. You won't even know what to do with yourself. You may even start watching old 90s movies. Just for the Joe Montana. So if you want some Smart Labels for your own, you can go to Amazon and just search Smart Labels, one word. You'll find them. It's as easy as that. Buy them. You'll love them. And after you love them, just email them and be like, gosh, we love that we found these on the Ghost podcast because it would be good.
And be specific because they kind of cast a wide net with the Ghost podcasts. There's 7 or 8 of us.
Tell them you're on the Ghost podcast, the guy who wears skeleton jammies.
Yes, that's me.
They'll know which one you're talking about. You are, 43 years old? Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Is This a Ghost? I'm Clayton Smith, and every week I tell a real ghost story from real history. And I want to emphasize that because I think people keep asking me, are these real stories? Yeah, they're real stories.
Right.
They're real ghosts are real, and these are the stories.
You're not allowed to make them up.
No, that's in the contract.
Except for next week.
I'm not allowed to make them up, but but one of us is, and we'll get to that soon. They're real. So just stop asking me if they're real. They are real. They are real. They're real ghosts, real stories. And I tell them every week to my real friend who does like me. He is my real friend. Mm-hmm. Stop asking me that
Absolutely.
Too. Patrick Dean, who does not take it real seriously. And you've brought up something really important, Patrick. Mm-hmm. So the Halloween episode, we record that by our watch in 1 week, seven mm-hmm. days. How's I know. It coming along?
Crazy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, just crazy.
For anyone who is rather new to the podcast, our Halloween tradition here is that Patrick does the Halloween episode. He mm-hmm. dresses up like Clayton. Mm-hmm. He takes over the podcast for the week. And I think, are we doing another Two Haunts and a Flaunt?
I think so. The week starts today, right? The week starts today.
The week, that's true.
See?
That's true. That's true. So you feeling good?
No. I mean, I guess. I'm not feeling bad.
Do you want to know my cheat code?
Sure.
In case you need it.
Yeah.
And you already know this cheat code. Mm-hmm. Email Jen.
I don't think it would come to that. How about this? Maybe this year, instead of Two Haunts and a Flaunt, it'll be two stories that I research and one that Jen researches. And you have to pick which one Jen researched.
Oh, that's going to be very easy. Sorry. But you're still on board? You're still doing this?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
Oodles of time. Oodles.
Our listeners, it's their favorite episode of the year.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's a shame.
We get more positive feedback on the Halloween episode every year than any other episode, which, you know, makes it challenging for me to be researching 51 stories a year. But it's good. It's good. This is why people come back. So, all right. Any questions, concerns, thoughts?
It's old hat. I know what I'm doing here.
You're gonna get right in the zone.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Before we get started, I want to tell you, so I have been going to a gym lately, a fitness center.
Really?
Getting real swole.
Okay.
And, I will usually go to the treadmill for a while, and the treadmills are all lined up in front of TVs on the walls, you know, classic sure. gym
yeah.
setup. And one of my favorite things to do actually is plant myself on the treadmill in front of the Fox News TV.
Oh, right.
Makes because sense. I like to see like how, like just, you know, what's happening yeah. over there.
You like to run angry. I get it.
Yeah. 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 And I'm not exposed to that on a normal basis. And I'm curious. And also, I want to be able to talk to my mom at Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what to talk about unless I watch Fox News. So I'll watch the Chiron. The volume is off, but I'll watch the Chirons. And, you know, they range from the buffoonish to the very infuriating. But the best part about watching Fox News while I'm running is the commercials.
Oh, my gosh. Yes.
Because you get like the gold coin commercials and there's a lot of commercials about like devices and gadgets that make it so you don't have to bend over anymore.
Right.
That's a big theme. Mm. The other day I was watching one of the commercials came on and it was, so the picture this, the setting is a suburban house. And then suddenly in front of that house by the sidewalk in a gross geyser shoots up, a broken sewer main has erupted under the ground. It shoots up into the air.
I hate that. I hate pressurized sewer lines. I don't know why. I know who invented those.
It's crazy. It comes up so high. It's so weird. But then the homeowner comes out. This middle-aged man comes out, and he, and again, I cannot hear the audio, but he stands with his hands on his head like this, and goes, and then you can see, and there's text on the screen then that appears that says, "Why does this keep happening?" And it was, you know, it's a commercial for some nationwide sewer repair company.
Sure.
But I thought, oh my God, this is a commercial that is directed exactly to Patrick. I have never seen an ad in my life as like granularly targeting a human person as this one is targeting you.
Big fans of the show, I guess.
Well, that's what I'm wondering. Do you feel compelled to start watching Fox News?
Not really. Not
they not think you're already doing it.
Sure, of course. Yeah.
Based on this one commercial about how many times your storm drain has exploded.
I know as I got older, you know, and got into college and whatnot, I started paying more attention to the commercials for the television I was watching because it started to kind of indicate whether I was maybe getting too old for the things that I was watching. You know, if I was watching some sort of animated series and all of a sudden all of the advertisements were for gum and dolls, then I sort of realized, okay, I think maybe this isn't the right programming for me. Imagine if you sit down to watch programming by choice and all of the advertisements are directed at the most gullible people on earth. What does that tell you about yourself at that point?
I have to assume that you don't recognize it as being directed at the most gullible people on earth. You just think, oh my God, that's, I need that. Yeah.
Brilliant. I have all this money in my bank account just wasting away. I should turn it into coins with people's faces on them. That would make more sense.
Yeah, it is. I'll tell you what, from the outside, it is something. It is something. What a world. Well, do you have any fun anecdotes from the week?
Boy, not really. I mean, the pajamas, obviously. But no, but beyond the pajamas, no, nothing.
Okay. And these are, again, these are, you sleep in long sleeves, long pants. That's your...
Yeah, it's chilly outside, of course.
Is that how you normally do it?
I normally sleep, yeah, and then I'll put socks on after this, too. Yeah.
And mittens and a cozy cap.
Yeah, but they don't have the bones on them. Just the...
Well, of course not. Yeah. So it's too hot. It's too hot for that. Can't sleep with pants on. It's too hot. Or maybe that's just my bed. All right. Well, do you want to hear a ghost story?
Yes. Like that's the quick look of panic. Did he leave?
I was not looking at you. I was looking at the soundboard, focusing on trying to read the thing I could never read. Ding.
Dong. Can't wait to get a soundboard. I'm going to do that all the fucking time.
Yeah, we're going to have to put some strict limitations on your abilities. I wonder if I can like control this remotely. Yeah. That will be important. Louis de Bois de Frontenac was born on May 22nd, 1622.
In Pittsburgh, PA.
Which famously preceded all of America. Mm-hmm. Yes. We don't, we don't have a lot of history about Louis, his younger years. We do know his parents were Henri de Malte. Mm-hmm. And this is a typo. This is an autocorrect. This says one. His mother's name was not one.
Okay.
I'm pretty confident about that. So it was something. Mm-hmm. Philippe.
That one you're sure of, though.
That one I'm sure because it's got the red squiggles underneath. Okay, so it said, I'm not touching this one. You fucked this up and that's on you.
I fucked up the first one. You fuck up the second one.
That's right. So Notes and I are doing a little pas de deux, I think they call that in French. Other than his parents' names or half his parents' names, we don't have a lot of details about his early life, but we do know that he entered the military in 1635 at the ripe old age of 13. He first served under the Prince of Orange in Holland.
Oh.
Any questions about that arrangement?
I mean...
Anything in those three words that has raised some sort of flag for you?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like he's from some sort of like a Roald Dahl novel or something like that.
And then all the pelicans came. They looped the Prince of Orange to all the pelicans, and he flew away. And Louis grabbed onto his ankles, and the centipede grabbed on as well. Yeah, so he, quote, fought with credit and received many injuries. Which is very funny, but I will also say if I were fighting in a war, that is me to a T, except for maybe the fought with credit part.
Yeah. fought when he must and injured often.
Fought when he got yelled at too much.
It's 13.
Hurt much.
13 years old in the army. My God.
What were you doing at 13?
Oof, boy. A lot of Final Fantasy. That was pretty much... Yeah, that was pretty much it.
I was doing Mario Kart.
Okay.
Mario Kart and GoldenEye.
Okay, yeah. So, very similar to this guy. This,
respect.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's how we do that.
I played Final Fantasy with much credit.
So. Was that the year? What was that? That was...
That was 95?
Not 7. It must have been Final Fantasy... 5?
Might have been 7.
This is...
Yeah.
7 was a fucking banger game, is why I ask. That Sephiroth. Oh, boy. What a scamp. Anyway, so he fights with credit. He's receiving many injuries. When he was 21, he was promoted to the rank of colonel. And 3 years later, quote, after distinguishing himself at the siege of Orbitello, where he had an arm broken, he was made Marshal de Camp.
It's an odd promotion structure here. Like, the more you get fucked up, is this like so they don't have to pay out your claims or something?
I don't know. It feels like the more injured he gets, the more they're kind of locking themselves into his pension, which seems like a bad way to go. As someone who's very accident prone, I kind of like this, though. I wish like every time I fucked up at work, they would give me a promotion. And here's something I didn't really understand about 17th century European warfare until I was researching this. This is a quote also from a source. Warfare ceased during the winter months.
Makes sense. Nobody wants to go outside in the winter.
I guess so. But like, what do you like when, at what point do you call time out?
Ooh, yeah, that's a tough one.
Does like one person have to die of frostbite before you're like, okay,
I wonder if it's one of these things where like one side shows up and the other side doesn't show up and they're like, I get it. I'm wearing all a jacket. Right. We're all wearing jackets. This is getting to be too much.
We'll see you in the thaw.
Yeah.
Yeah.
which still like amazes me that George Washington was just like, you know what? This is stupid. I'm going to kill all of you on Christmas. and the British were like, this is no way to fight.
This is uncivilized.
Yeah. Why are you stabbing me on Christmas, no less?
Well, I've bled out. Goodbye. And that's how we won the war. So, yeah, I guess this was a common thing. And so he was a full-time soldier, but during the winter months, he needed to keep himself occupied.
Mm-hmm. Like work at a grocery store or something like that. You know, like Joe DiMaggio used to in the off-season. You know.
Did he work at a grocery store?
DiMaggio probably did, but a lot of the early baseball guys, I mean, it didn't really pay anything. You know, all the cigars you could smoke throughout the season, but that was pretty much it. And then
Yeah. But he had like Marilyn Monroe money, right?
Yeah, so he was really busy in the offseason. So
he was quite busy. Anyway, so Frontenac needs to be occupied. So during the winter months, he takes up residence in the king's court.
Mm. It's a hobby, I guess.
Yeah, he's just, I think so. Listen, in the 17th century, that's the best case scenario. Yep. That's where you want to be. That's where the food goes. But being in the king's court does not mean the king like pays you to hang around all day. Of course, you're just there. You're kind of leeching on to what's going on. And also you have to wear like the right clothes and attend the right parties. And you're paying for all that stuff.
Okay.
So because of this, Frontenac goes into massive debt.
Really? Just on the clothing?
Just on the clothing alone. I don't know if you've seen paintings of, you know, 17th century French outfits.
Very but they are
elaborate.
Very, very much. Yeah. And then, you know, if everybody's ordering duck at lunch, you don't want to be like the guy who's like, well, I'm really trying to save. I'm just going to have a salad. And like, oh, fuck you. We're all getting duck. Come on.
Yeah. So he goes into debt. Now, this leads him eventually to seek an arrêt du consul d'état.
Yeah. Same here. When I got into debt.
Yeah, been there. Which, it's funny, I Googled this and I couldn't actually find a very good answer, but I've pieced together. I think what this means is at some point he had to ask a court to pardon his debts.
Oh, just declare bankruptcy. Like basically French bankruptcy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, our boy's not good with money. Which, I'll tell you, it's so weird because you look at this drawing of him, which I'll show you here, and you tell me if this guy looks like he's good with money or not good with money. What do you think?
Oh, man, I'm really trying to place who this guy looks like. He's got a lot, there's a lot of Sean Connery in there. There's a lot of Sean Connery in there. Sean Connery was like a cheap mop for a wig.
And a sweet mustache.
And that hat as well. That's like a Musketeers type hat. And I like that hat a lot. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Big fan of the hat.
He's got the sash, got the cravat. Like that's not cheap.
Oh, yeah.
So,
and everything you see there has to get washed every night. Yeah. It's very expensive.
Yeah, I think if there's one thing I know about the 1700s, they were doing laundry, I think, constantly.
Can you imagine? Oh, just really good. Constant. Yeah.
God. He does have great eyebrows, though, I will
they
say.
They are, yeah.
Got the people's eyebrow going on there, and I like that.
Looks like it might actually be hanging off of the face at some angles.
Just found a way to shave it just enough so it kind of like leans off of there. And I celebrate that. Anyway, so he continues to serve in the military until 1648, when finally there is a peace treaty. So he returns to his father's house in Paris. Mm-hmm. And in October of that year, he gets married to a woman named Anne de la Grange Trianon.
Mm-hmm.
And sounds this nice. Is, yeah, let's see. Let's check in on.
Oh, well, I bet she's very smart.
I have been racking my brain trying to figure out why a noble woman in 17th century France would be wearing a hat like this.
Yeah, like it.
And it's a war helmet.
Yeah.
It doesn't even fit.
Is she carrying a shield and a bow and arrow as well?
I think so. So she may be very badass.
Mm-hmm. She could, yeah.
These plumes, yeah. Those are going to get you shot.
Those plumes are a target right there. Mm-hmm. Also, I mean, again, if you are going into battle with obviously a lot of like, aren't she like armor on her like bodice or whatever there?
It's so hard. I think so.
Yeah. But then she is stark white from forehead to bosom, which I can imagine is probably not a great look for the battlefield, you know. Maybe put the shield over that part. I'm not entirely sure.
It seems like maybe this does not inspire a lot of confidence in me that she's been outside doing archery a lot.
Right, yeah. This is a little bit of stolen valor here. This is, this is clearly armor her husband brought home from the war, and she's modeling for the painting.
Speaking of stolen valor, have I told you about my graduation ceremony debacle? Have I told you about any of this?
I don't think so.
Well, this is, everyone's going to love hearing this. So... I'm now teaching at a new college, Mary Baldwin University.
Right.
And at my last college at Columbia, when it was graduation or commencement weekend, you would just show up and they would provide you with a robe and a hat and a hood. Like they would, the whole works.
Mm-hmm.
And you would do that and you would go on stage and you'd shake hands and stuff. But here at Mary Baldwin, you had to provide your own robe.
Oh.
And hat and hood. Now okay. I have my own master's hood because that's a thing you told, but I never received the robe or the cap.
Sure.
And I was like, oh shit, I need to have this by like 2 days from now.
Ooh.
Because there was some event that we had to dress in full regalia for. And I was like, what do I do? So, and I messaged, there was a guy, it just so happens, one of the guys on my search committee who hired me, he just retired and he is my height.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, so you're like his replacement. Oh,
yes,
okay.
Exactly. Yeah. So in so many ways, yeah. Yes. and weirdly, also this guy grew up in Pacific. His family is there.
Okay. Yeah. Does he have a beard as well?
No.
Okay.
Clean shaven.
Interesting.
Clean
shaven. Yeah.
Now, when he was 41, did he have a beard? Mm-hmm. Can't speak to that. He did go. He got his doctorate. Guess what school?
SLU. I have no idea. Mary Baldwin?
Mizzou. You're
Mizzou.
Right.
Yeah.
Mizzou. Yeah, we're going to school. Anyway, so yes, parallel lives. But anyway, so I reached out to him and I was like, Bruce, so sorry. We didn't have to do this at my last place. Can I, like, are you using your gown? Yeah. Can I, you're not going to be there, right? Can I, do you mind? And he was like, actually, you can have it. So very generous. He gave it to me. It was wonderful.
Fantastic. $20 saved. I love it.
Oh, Patrick. You've got a master's. You must know what those things cost. It's like $100 saved. Yeah. So he gives it to me and I'm like, this is great. Now, the only problem is he has a doctorate. He's a PhD.
Right.
I only have a master's. Uh-huh. Now, this is not going to mean anything to like 99.9% of our listeners. But if you're in academia, you know, the PhD robe has these like felt rings around the sleeves.
Oh.
And that signifies you're a doctor.
Sure. Okay. So you're like trying to cut those off really furiously.
Well, so I have this thing and I'm like, well, this is the only thing I have to wear. Like, I don't have a PhD. Mm-hmm. I guess I have to wear this, but like everyone's getting mad at me because everyone else knows I have a master's.
Right.
And I was really kind of anxious about this. Mm-hmm. But then I realized I also don't have a hat.
Mm.
And so I had to find a hat. So then I thought, well, what I should do is just get a master's robe and a master's hat because that'll solve my problems.
Right.
But we're on short notice. Like, I'm kind of freaking out. Yeah. I'm being very anxious about this. Mm-hmm.
And you couldn't turn the robe inside out.
Oh, well, there's a tag.
Oh, I mean, you couldn't cut the
monogrammed anyway. With Bruce's initials. Yeah. So it's going to be, you know, real weird. So I went on Amazon and I had to buy the hat that matched the robe. So I bought a doctoral hat, not a master's hat. And anyway, so now when I go to these events, I am decked out in full PhD garb.
Okay.
And everyone calls me Dr. Smith.
Okay.
And I told the dean of my college, I was like, listen, I don't know. Maybe I'm making too big of a deal at this, but this is why I'm wearing this because my dean doesn't yet have a PhD. So he's in the master's thing and a master's normal hat. And he knows that I am not a PhD.
Right.
And so I told him, and I said, this is stolen valor. And, but here's why. And he was like, Clayton, I don't think anyone cares. And I had spent like 48 hours very stressed. And I'm still stressed about it. We had to wear it again the other day. And I'm just waiting for someone to be like, wait a minute, I saw your transcripts. I didn't see PhD on there. In hindsight, I regret telling that story because no one is going to be interested.
Pretty boring. Pretty boring. But
me and Tom Long.
Yeah.
that's the audience for that story. Anyway, sorry, everyone. Let's get back to the story, shall we? So he marries Anne. And you may be asking yourself, gosh, he got home in 1648. He marries someone that same year. Like, how did he manage to find the love of his life so quickly?
That's what I was wondering.
Yeah. Well, it turns out Frontenac married Anne because she was set to inherit a large sum of money from her deceased mother.
Okay.
And her father upon his death.
Okay.
So her mom was rich, died, dad got everything, and he's not doing well.
Suddenly someone's a little bit better with money than they were 48 hours ago.
That's right. This is the sound of hands rubbing together greedily. So he marries her, but what Frontenac did not know was Anne's father fucking hated him.
Okay.
And so shortly after Frontenac and Anne were married, Anne's father remarried a new woman, a new wife, a new person, and with her had a child with the specific intent that his fortune would not go to Anne.
Wow.
As far as historians can tell us, that is the one and only reason why he married and had a child after that. So,
wow.
So Anne wouldn't get his money, so then Frontenac would not get his money.
Spite is strong.
You got to respect that.
A lot of respect. A lot of respect.
Got to respect that. Spite. Yeah. So then eventually Anne's father dies, but Frontenac receives $0.
And the world's richest baby is just toddling around.
Just falling into the money bin and almost dying. So surprisingly, the marriage between Frontenac and Anne hit the rocks.
Oh,
the rocks,
that's a shame.
Yeah. Now, they did have one child together, a little boy. But soon after, here's a quote, incompatibility of temper led to a separation.
Oh.
Now, here's what I'll say. They did not get divorced.
Okay.
They took some time apart.
Mm-hmm.
See where this might go.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to see where things might go, Frontenac then moved to his estate in central France and began to live it up.
Okay. Yeah. He's going
to... Just to see.
Just, you know... He's going to sow a little bit, you know, he's going to sow some seeds.
Mm-hmm. But we'll reap nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Just to be clear. and therefore, he falls once again hopelessly into debt. So he's partying, he's spending lots of money, he goes into debt. Then he goes off the radar for 15 years.
Oh, wow.
There is basically nothing about him during this 15-year period.
With this being the 17th century, everyone just assumes he's dead.
I have to believe that's right.
That has to be the ploy here.
Now, in historical hindsight, that probably means he went on one amazing bender at the best time. But in 1669, he resurfaces. France sent an army to help with the Venetians against the Ottomans.
Mm.
and Franzen, you know, as you know,
the, yeah, of
you
course,
know,
yeah,
the student of such things. Frontenac was placed in command of all of the French troops.
Really?
So it's quite a rise back to glory.
They had to go dig him up somewhere off of a vineyard and say, oh, hey, one more ride. And he's like,
drop that bottle.
What does it
wipe off your nose?
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's a quote too. In that expedition, he won military glory, but his fortune not improved. And in fact, by 1672, his debt has just been racking up. It is up to 343,228 livres.
Seems like a lot.
It does seem like a lot for 1672. Yeah. Any six-figure number is a lot. I did try to figure out the conversion of this, but in 1672, obviously there was no such thing as the U.S. dollar. Mm. And so it became very confusing. Mm. So
a lot.
I did not.
Just a bunch. It's millions of dollars.
Yeah. Between $1 and $18 trillion.
Okay. Yeah. Somewhere in the middle there.
Somewhere in there. The mean, maybe. It's enough debt that his property is seized by creditors.
Oh.
This is like a big estate in central France. Yeah. So it's sizable. But then Lady Fortune smiles down. For some reason, Frontenac has all these great connections. Obviously, he was put in charge of the French military. Mm-hmm. And now he's offered the position of governor of New France.
Oh, hey.
Over in the country of...
Canada.
Canada. This is very exciting for Frontenac. Mm-hmm.
His creditors are not in Canada.
His creditors are not there. And more to the point, as long as he's governor, his debts, legally speaking, are deferred.
This sounds very similar to somebody that we're currently encountering on a national
level. Please make me president. I can't go to jail. Sure does. So he's appointed and he says, oh, yes, thank you so much. And he goes to Quebec. So he's in charge of Quebec. He moves into Quebec City and he gets into town and he's like, I want to make some big changes around here.
Mm-hmm.
I got some ideas, got some plans. Make some things happen.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to borrow money from everybody in this little town.
Debts are deferred, everybody. He founded a fur trading post on Lake Ontario called Fort Frontenac.
Good idea.
Yes.
Give yourself some credibility right off the bat.
Absolutely. And then tell everyone it's been here for centuries.
I'm actually named after this. I don't know if you knew that. Yeah, this is my family's fort.
Can I interest you in an investment?
Yeah.
Would you like to put money here? It's really safe. Really safe. It's during this time he meets a French explorer named René Robert Cavalier Signon de La Salle.
Wow. Just plowed right through it.
I've been drinking some whiskey now, so just went for it. So he meets a man named LaSalle. Frontenac secures royal permission for LaSalle to head down the Mississippi River. Oh. So again, he is so fucking connected. Mm-hmm. So I don't know exactly what the story is there, but he's just got the royalty loves him. And they say, yep, you can send whoever you want down the Mississippi. He chooses LaSalle, and LaSalle sails down the Mississippi. One of his stops, of course, is Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
On his way down toward the Mississippi, which is why he's the LaSalle of LaSalle Street.
Ah, makes sense.
In Chicago. Yeah, there's a statue of him in Lincoln Park. Anyway, so all this expansion works because Frontenac is reappointed governor at the end of his term.
All right.
Which is a real mitzvah because debt is once again deferred. So he goes on to do a whole bunch of stuff, which is, I don't know, you can go read it. It's really boring, but he's just trying to make himself useful so he doesn't get fired because he has so much debt. Let's see. During this time, the French fight the English. He's in charge of some stuff. He loses some of that stuff. He wins more stuff. He fights the Iroquois. That's the cliff notes. Good. Anyway, he gets sick and dies on November 28th, 1698.
Oh, wow.
It's okay.
I mean, I kind of figured he was going to die, but...
Every man dies.
Mm-hmm.
Not every man really lives.
Not every man fights the Iroquois.
That's right. That's right. He got a whole bunch of stuff named after him, including the St. Louis, Missouri suburb of Frontenac.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Very hoity-toity.
Probably the wealthiest. It's up there.
It's the hoity-toityest mall we have, put it that way. So
it's called a plaza, not a mall. I know, that's how you know it's real fancy. And sometime in the 1700s, Frontenac's governor's mansion in Quebec City is demolished.
Oh.
It's too old.
Okay.
Get rid of this house. We're done with this house.
This guy's dead.
He's dead. The house is dead. We're all dead. Get new. But eventually, in the 1870s, Quebec saw a resurgence of French architecture.
Mm-hmm.
This was in an effort to recapture the grandeur of the 17th century. So they shouldn't have torn the fucking thing down.
Yep.
They tore everything down, and then 100 or 50 years later, they're like, mm-hmm. What if all of Quebec looked French? Like, wow, great idea.
It's like, why did I throw away all of those jeans from the 90s? I could totally, they'd be so cool now.
My jeans are so small now. They were never tight. Now they look so tight by comparison. Mm-hmm. I just can't win. It's very frustrating.
So many JNCOs I threw away. Why? Why?
I had so many jeans with hammer loops on them, and I don't know why. I was never a carpenter. So cool now. Anyway, so this new attempt to rebuild Quebec resulted in, among other things, a beautiful new hotel that was built directly on top of the grounds of Frontenac's 17th century home.
Hmm, okay.
It was one of several tourism hotels built by the Canadian Pacific Railway. So it's a time when the railroad is building hotels to bring people in.
Mm-hmm.
And here's what it looked like.
Holy shit. Okay.
Can you believe this?
The railroad built this?
The railroad built. Now, I will say it's been rehabbed a couple times.
And expanded
a couple times.
Right.
But basically, this is, yes.
Oh, my God. Okay.
Can you try to describe what you're seeing here?
I mean, it's kind of a, there's two distinct areas of the hotel. There's some sort of like a barrier building in the front with a bunch of spires and probably 4 or 5 stories. There's a beautiful gazebo out front. It's like an orange brick with copper roofing that oxidizes copper roofing.
Yeah. Turn green. Yeah.
Yeah. And then in the center of it is this enormous tower. It's probably, 20 stories tall. It looks like the main feature that also has the same orange brick, but with a black gothic almost roof to it. Just a very striking, beautiful building.
It's one of the most incredible buildings I think I've ever seen in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a hotel
mm-hmm.
built by a railroad.
And this is a Holiday Inn Express now. So
you're not as far off as you'd probably like to be. God, can you imagine what kind of hotel the Amtrak would build today?
Oh, my God.
Probably similar.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
This hotel was designed by a man named Bruce Price, who apparently was a big influence on Frank Lloyd Wright.
Mm-hmm.
Although, stylistically, there's not a lot of overlap. Mm-hmm. So I don't know in what way. It has, you said 20 stories. You're so close. 18 stories in that center building. Though it does look even bigger because it's built on top of a hill, which is 177 feet up. It has 610 rooms, 8 of which have been turned into specialty themed rooms.
Oh, I'm a big fan of themed rooms.
Yeah, well, these themed rooms include the Celine Dion room.
Not okay. All right, what else you got?
And the Alfred Hitchcock room.
Okay, okay. All right, that's 2 out of the 8.
Yeah. Now, the Hitchcock room, most of the rooms that are themed are named for Canadian governors and like English royalty.
Okay. Yeah. Boring shit. Yeah. Does the Hitchcock room have like a balcony where like the railing falls off or?
I will tell you, I'm not sure I've ever been more disappointed in my life than I was when I Googled the Hitchcock suite.
Mm-hmm.
It is just a normal room with pictures of Alfred Hitchcock on the walls.
What a shame.
Celine Dion room, regular room with pictures of Celine Dion on the walls.
Yeah.
It's a real missed opportunity. Real missed opportunity. I think almost everyone who has a room named after them is Canadian, but Hitchcock, obviously not. But he is there because this hotel was the filming location for the final scene in his movie, I Confess.
Oh, okay.
You ever see I Confess?
I have not.
It's one of his lesser, kind of lesser known, less popular, but it's very good. Anyway, so that's the hotel. There's also a rooftop garden where honey is harvested from 70,000 honeybees.
Hey.
Yeah. So, pretty triggering for those of us who grew up in the My Girl generation, but for everyone else, it probably sounds pretty cool.
And theme room number 8 is the Macaulay Culkin suite.
And next door is the Anna Klumsky room, and it's just sobs.
You'll want to make sure to bring your glasses, because you'll need them to see.
It's got so sad. This hotel opened in 1893, and they called it Chateau Saint-Louis, naming it after our friend Louis Desbois de Frontenac.
Mm-hmm.
His name's on the sign and his bones are in the basement. Built right on top of his house. Now, it seems that while he lived, Frontenac began to have regrets about how things had ended with his wife, Anne.
Oh, okay.
And again, they're not divorced.
Yeah. Still not divorced. Separated.
Still not divorced.
By a hemisphere. Yes.
Yeah.
Separated.
Yeah. Pretty greatly separated, yeah. I would say. Yeah. but still not divorced. And several years after he got to New France, he was feeling a little guilty. You okay?
I have a cat that is playing in his water dish right now and just doing it so loudly. So, yeah, just.
So cute.
Great. I love when he does that.
Little short king. Where are we here? Oh, he's feeling guilty. So he sends for Anne.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I think maybe even earlier than this, you probably send for the wife. Assuming you're trying to, you know, kind of, hey, look what I run. All of whatever the fuck this is. You know.
We killed all the Indians. Yeah. Do you want to come see? Yeah, I think, you know, the more generous version of this, a generous take on this would be, you know, now he's in a place where he no longer has to worry about his great debt,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of what drove their marriage in the first place.
Right.
And now he's kind of in a more comfortable place to say, actually, this could be about love.
Right. Except for in 3 years when I'm up for re-election, it's going to get really anxious again. But then if I win, cool. It'll be great.
Yeah. And I really could use, I need people to think of me as a family man. Yeah. So if you could just come over and bring our son, that'd be great.
I've been borrowing my friends, you know, wives and children.
But have been reading the Virginia News.
Yeah.
Hmm. Oh boy. So anyway, so he sends for Anne and he asks her to please join him in his new life across the sea. He waits.
Mm-hmm.
She does not come.
Oh.
He eventually dies.
Well,
as we've already discussed. When he died, he requested that his heart be sent to Anne in a box.
I will show you. What happens if you don't come to Canada to see me?
Now, I don't know exactly the point of this move. It's a big gesture.
It is a big gesture. I will give you that.
Big gesture.
It's not a clear gesture, though. This is
not at all. Not even a little bit.
Unless I don't know as much about 17th century French culture as I thought I did, but I don't really think this is a clear gesture.
Yeah, courtship in the old French Empire is very strange and new to me, but. So he sends his heart, or he has his heart sent to her in a box. She receives it.
After how many weeks? Like, this is a lot of time for a heart to spend on a boat.
I don't know, but yeah, again, it did like, go obviously by boat. So
yeah, they didn't.
And I don't think ice is not like a thing you have.
Yeah, they didn't easy like pack it to. In dry ice like Ted Drews or something like that. This shows no. up pretty jerkified. I would
imagine the other probably like sourdough yeah. style. They probably put it in a big jar of salt and were like, I don't know, good luck.
She probably opens up the mail one day. What is this jar of salt? This is so nice. We should start using this in our soup. And after about a month, she's like, there's something hard in the jar. I don't know what's going on in here.
When she eventually opens a box, she sends it back.
Oh, yeah. Can you do that?
Yeah, you return to sender. It's a whole thing. Elvis Presley has a whole song about it.
Like, famously, the sender does not... I mean, he clearly isn't going to need it anymore.
Well, and I don't know who sent it.
Right.
Exactly. So, but she stamps it, return to sender. She sends it back. She's not interested. Mm. So that gives you some insight into that relationship.
So the guy on the boat, the postal worker guy on the boat, he sees the box show back up. He knows this box.
Oh yeah, he's
seen this box before. This is the box that's kind of damp on the bottom, and nobody knows why. And oh, look what's back!
It smells a little gamey. It's weird.
It smells worse than it did the first time it was on the boat, and now it's going back.
But it's a living. Mm-hmm. So this is their whole deal. Mm-hmm. So anyway, so once the new hotel is built over Frontenac's old home, the spirit of Frontenac. Finally, once again, had a place to sit and wait for Anne once more.
Ah.
And his ghost is often seen on the second floor of the hotel near a window looking out over the water and searching longingly for Anne.
And for the mail to come back.
And
because like,
he didn't send the heart back again. It was like, this cannot come back. Come on. This time I'll send her my desiccated penis as well. That'll remind her of our good times. Please don't send it back.
She's reading the letter. Please see attachment. What attachment? Oh, fuck no. Oh, wow. Come on.
So you'll see him sitting sometimes on the second floor. You have to be quiet, though, if you do see him, because any sort of noise and he disappears completely.
Mm. Yep.
He's also sometimes seen just sort of moping around the hotel. He's not back there.
Are you sure? I can hear him playing in the cat's water.
Oh, man. Now, for what it's worth, there's also a second ghost at this hotel.
Oh. Hmm.
No one knows who she is, but they all agree she exists. Mm-hmm. And she's a woman in a white nightgown who likes to surprise guests in their sleep.
Okay. Could be a voyeur too. You never know.
Pretty kinky. Sounds kind of exciting, to be honest.
If you're an unknown ghost like that, do you know you're unknown? That's kind of the big question. Like, do you think you are just as well known as the guy that sits there heartless on the second floor?
I have to think, actually, most ghosts, at least the ones we talked about, most of them are probably more surprised to find out that they are well known.
Okay.
Because we don't have a whole lot of like famous ghosts, like famous people who sure. become ghosts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Most of them are just like Joe Schmoes who have become famous as a ghost.
Mm-hmm.
And that level of newfound fame is probably very disorienting.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not like a lot of people are like, oh yeah, that's the house where, you know, Ernest Hemingway, you know, pulls down your pants sometimes, you know, it's
right.
It's always person becomes more famous after death.
Sure. Now, I do think there's a Hemingway ghost. You can see him kind of shoot his head off.
Interesting. And then he pulls down your pants.
Yeah. Well, then it's like, gotcha. So she does the sleep thing. She's not a harmful ghost.
Doesn't sound like it.
But she will. Sounds like a pretty helpful ghost, you ask me. Been single for a long time, and she sounds pretty helpful. She will sit on the end of people's beds and watch them while they doze off. Which I guess is her king. Everyone's got to have a king.
Yeah.
And if you want to be haunted by a sad sack and a weirdo, you can. This hotel now is owned by not Holiday Inn Express, but the Fairmont.
Oh.
The Fairmont Le Chateau Frontenac. and it is open for business. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you, I looked up today, just I picked like some random dates in the spring just to see how much it would cost. Mm-hmm. It's not as expensive as I would have expected from a place that looks like this. Because again, it does look, it's fucking fabulous. $300 a night range.
Huh. And that's Canadian dollars. So it's like $100.
So it's like 50 cents, I think. So at this point. Yeah, it's pretty good.
First poutine's free. First Labatt's free after that.
Man, I'll tell you what, if I swear to God, if they made that as an actual offer, I would book a month.
Honey, it pays for itself. We really need to be there right now.
I don't know if you've had poutine, but this is going to be worth it. And that is the story of Frontenac. And I guess we'll call it the Fairmont Le Chateau Frontenac Hotel. Got to go by the current name. What do you think? Good? Want to go?
I like any like ghost hotel where I can also earn points. I like that. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, that's true. That's a really important point that we haven't discussed nearly enough on this podcast. And as we're talking about ghost tourism, it is worth mentioning, I think, if we're going to be responsible, that, yeah, make sure you're staying at haunted hotels that work for, that give you points, that give you a reward system. Where is Quebec City in relation to, like, Montreal? It's funny. If you look at Google Maps and you type in Quebec City, the image that comes up is this hotel.
What else it would be?
From Montreal? Just wondering if we saw this when we were there. Nah, probably not. It's like northeast. So
yeah,
we did not. Yeah. So no. The answer is no. Anyway, no one cares about that. Beautiful hotel, though. And, you know, if you want to go, you can. Gosh, what else? What else? What else? That feels like a full episode, huh? Check our time. We done it? Did we do it? Oh, yes, we've done it. We've hit our mark. Okay. Well, that's great. Thank God. This is an episode of Is This a Ghost? The notes this week. I was worried. This is kind of a short, notes-wise, a short episode. So we burned enough time talking about things no one cares about. All the notes this week are taken by me, Clayton Smith. All the funny jokes are from Patrick Dean. Our audio editor is Jeremy Montoya. Our video editor is Jen Swanson. Our social media manager is Kai Valonis. And I would say just stay out of Canada, really, because if you go up there, you are absolutely destined to become a ghost. And we'll talk about you next week here on this podcast called Is This a Ghost? Nailed it.